U.S. equities are trading higher and holding on to those gains, while Federal Reserve Board Chairman Jay Powell is answering questions from the press. And so far, Powell hasn't said anything to end the rally in stocks. But, you know, there's still time.
Live from dangerously close to Corn's Gino line via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we're pleased to bring you Arlen Suderman from INTLFC Stone. And right after the news, Todd Horowitz from BubbaTrading.com. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis Michelson, thank you so much. I was trying to channel my inner Bubba in the open there. You know, so far so good. Jay hasn't said anything to end the rally in stocks. The Dow is up more than 625 points right now. And as long as we get through this and he doesn't say anything to end the rally in stocks, I'm going to call it a victory.
Well, I will say,
Bubba was my best good friend.
So there's that.
There is that. How you doing, man?
Super great. Do I sound pixely?
A little bit.
I feel just a little tingly.
Well, you know, I think it's funny that some people have told me that every now and then when you start pixelating like you do, that you remind them both physically and audioly of Max Headroom.
Well, yes, that's kind of the whole thing, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I've got the hair for it.
Can you do a Diet Coke commercial for us? Man, I am way back in the 80s. Holy
smokes.
I'm not sure
the sponsors would care for that. You're way back. Yes, yes. Jumping gigawatts, Chip. You're going to go there.
Yes, yes. Oh, my gosh. Okay, real quick, slight gains in corn, modest gains in soybean meal, and bean oil. Wheat was under pressure. We had some mixed trade in live cattle and feeder cattle futures. And lean hogs, the May contract was higher, but the back month contracts were lower. By the time you get out to the D's, 20 off more than $3 out in the December lean hog contract. So some big moves there. Hey, Bubba standing by. Let's go ahead and get to this news.
Chip, wheat futures were an anchor on the grain markets, with traders pointing to potential rains in the U.S. southern plains on an already dry soils in Western Europe. A lack of export demand was also a negative for wheat prices. Many traders were looking for a surge in export demand for U.S. wheat when Russia announced it was restricting exports to maintain a domestic supply. July hard red winter wheat was 6¾ cents lower, 477. July soft red fell 9½ cents to 516½. July spring wheat slipped 6½ cents to 507½, Chip.
Man, it feels like we've been saying the same thing about wheat forever. We're just waiting for that export demand, waiting for that export demand. Every now and then we get 2-3 weeks where it feels pretty good and we put some strength back in the market, and then it just dries up on us again.
Ethanol production in the week ended April 24 averaged just 537,000 barrels per day. Chip, that's down 26,000 barrels per day. And average daily ethanol production last week was less than half of what it was at the same at the high of this year.
Yeah.
Ethanol stocks in the week fell 1.352 million barrels to 26.337 million barrels. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady said this morning on AgriTalk that the drawdown in stocks now indicates ethanol use is now ahead of production, which means the ethanol breakdown has gotten about as bad as it will get. May corn futures were 1¾ cents higher, 304½. July corn firmed 2½ cents, 314½. D's corn closed at 333½, up 3½ cents. And quickly, Chip, in the intro, I mentioned corn's Maginot line, and I was referencing a tweet from Matt Campbell. $3 corn is corn's Maginot line there. We're at 304 in the May.
Yeah, absolutely. And we posted a low of $3.25. So we went 3/4 of a cent through the low that we posted last week, still maintaining a three handle. I don't know if it lasts or not. We'll find out from Arlen.
Soybean futures did a nice job following upside momentum from the stock market, with growing optimism that medical professionals are getting closer to a treatment for those infected with COVID-19, providing support. USDA this morning also announced the sale of nearly 109,000 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to Mexico, with 65,000 tons for shipment this year and 44,000 tons for shipment in the 2020-21 marketing year. May bean futures were 5¾ cents higher, 8.31¾. July beans gained 5½ cents to close at 8.37½. Novi bean futures 8.44¼, up 5¼ cents on the day, Chip.
Yeah, Gilead stock, they had to halt trading earlier, up 6.91% right now. It sounds like, is it Gilead or Gilead?
Gilead is what I've heard.
Gilead, yep. Sciences. They are the ones that seem to be pushing toward the treatment for those infected with COVID-19.
Well, let's talk livestock, where boxed beef prices continue to push to the upside. This morning, heavyweight choice graded boxes were up another $16.98 to a record $347.80. Select graded boxes jumped $11.37 and traded to $332.25 this morning.
Oh my gosh.
The record boxed beef prices were at least limiting selling in live cattle futures. June live cattle were 42½ cents lower, 84.27½, and August cattle gained 25 cents to close at 90.77½. May feeders, a nickel higher, 118.55. And on the snout side, pork product prices dipped for the first time in more than a week, with carcass prices down this morning down $1.19. That weighed on lean hog futures, with June down 67½ to 55.52½, July off 177½ to 58.47½. Chip.
All right, very good. Let's bring in Todd Horwitz, BubbaTrading.com. Dow is still up. Dow's up about 630 points, and Jay Powell is still talking, Bubba. How do you like that?
He's giving out puke bags with his speech as well. It's great. He's a wonderful guy. Let's give everything away. We can just become a socialist nation and be done with it. I mean, you know, just keep printing free money for everybody.
It's unbelievable.
What he should do. You know, Howard Schultz had the best idea. I don't know if you heard him. I'm not a big fan, but he said they should create this as a big loan for anybody who needs it, and they give them an extended period at a tiny interest rate instead of keep printing more money to make our dollars worth less. I don't get it, but you know, what am I supposed to know?
Yeah.
In the meantime, the dollar's high.
it's absolutely crazy what's happening. Bubba, I haven't just opened it up to you and said, what are you watching most right now? And I'm asking you, what are you watching most?
Well, actually, I'm watching everything. But I'm watching the grains very closely because I think they're getting close. They're still, obviously, every other day, it's like a change. And I'm watching the meats pretty close because I think those are also bottoming. You know, I always watch the equities. And to me, look, we're going up until we don't. And today, we're actually breaking out of a very tight range, which could lead to a continuation of this rally. So at the end of the day, but I'm really watching the meats and grains because I really think those are getting very close to making a move. And especially if we get this country open, then I think that's going to open the door and we can get these big spreads from the box beef prices off because, of course, they don't have any inventory to sell. So the prices keep going up.
Yeah. Yeah. Is the timing right, Bubba, in your opinion? To reopen?
I think you make a decision. Is it worth, you know, we're worried about life, and obviously we feel bad for anybody who doesn't make it, but at the end of the day, is it worth creating a depression in this country and destroying the people that are still here? I mean, again, that's, in my view, you got to open it. You got to get things going because we can no longer not be in business. I mean, the poor farmers and producers are getting destroyed here. They can't sell anything because they got nowhere to go to it. And of course, their key asset, their land, is losing value as we speak. So again, this is a horrible deal for everybody. And we need to get the business. We need to get the country open as best we can. Obviously, it's not going to be sports for a while. It can become any other thing like that where there's big gatherings.
Right.
But at least people going out to eat.
Bubba, thanks, man. We'll talk to you later. We got Arlen Suderman up next. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture farms on for our family and yours.
It's Farm On Week on AgriTalk. We are getting stories of what it means to farm on in the morning show. In the first hour of AgriTalk, we're talking with producers about what it means to farm on for them. Had some great conversations so far, and we're going to continue it into tomorrow. Dee Faber, Dwayne Faber is going to be on. So we'll find out.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, we'll find out what it means to him to farm on. And farming on with those three girls that are the source of so much content for his tweets. I mean, it's just funny stuff.
According to the latest numbers, over at least last week anyway, the way a lot of people were farming on was jamming as much corn in the ground as they could possibly get.
That's right. That's exactly right. Exactly right. All right, let's get this conversation started. Arlen Suderman, INTLFC Stone, is with us. Arlen, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Doing well. Glad to be back with you, Chip.
Good, good, good. You heard Bubba talking about now's the time. We got to do this. We need to give business owners an opportunity to experience what the new normal might be like. Are you on board with that?
Oh, I really am. I think we did what we needed to do originally because there was so much we didn't know. My Chinese employees started talking to me about this virus back in December.
Yep.
In January, it started hitting the media more, and I was really downplaying it. I listened to an epidemiologist do a blog or a podcast at the end of January. That really intrigued me, and I spent the weekend doing some studying on it. And I came back and told our people in early February, first week of February, watch out for this virus. Its greatest threat is not the death toll, as serious as that is, but it's the type of virus that creates fear in people. Yep. And fear shuts down people and shuts down economies. And now there's data coming out, particularly over the last week to 10 days, to show that the actual death toll versus number of people who probably have it is closer to that of the influenza, very similar to influenza. And CDC affirmed again today that 96% of the people hospitalized with this are people who had other serious high-risk type of health issues.
Right.
And so for the bulk of us, and those people, you know, we have many listeners out there who have been hit very directly with this and have experienced that. All of us have loved ones who may have those high-risk factors. But there is a huge human toll to sending the economy into a depression. And as Bubba hinted, we're on the cusp of doing that. If we keep this shut down too long, we do structural damage to the economy, and we can't afford the human toll of leaving it in that state too long.
That's exactly right. I'm feeling more and more in agreement all the time. I mean, when we first started to shut things down, I was coming back from vacation. I'll admit it was the middle of March, and I'm listening to the Friday free-for-all on AgriTalk, and I had to call in. I had to participate in it because there was no balance at that time, Arlen. There was zero balance between, listen, we're going to shut this thing down versus what are we going to do to keep the economy going. And I was just, I was fearful over the just abandoning the economy at that time. And I hope abandon is too strong of a word. I hope we can bring it back.
Yeah, I hope so too. And fear is a very strong emotion. And as I've tweeted about this, I find that I trigger a lot of emotions out there. But one of the tweets that got the most attention was when I said, if you have a loved one who survived the Great Depression, who's still alive, do me a favor and go ask them about the human toll that the Great Depression cost. And that got a lot of retweets and a lot of comments. But overwhelmingly, there's been support. Now, granted, the bulk of my 30,000 followers are ag-related to the trade and to agriculture. And so there is a bias there. We're feeling the pain very directly. But certainly a desire. Those animal spirits of America that made this into a great country are coming out again.
Yep, absolutely. Okay. Colin Peterson, the head of the House Agriculture Committee from Minnesota, was in Worthington, Minnesota at the packing plant there, JBS plant, where they are going to start euthanizing hogs, Arlen. It's heartbreaking to see that this is where we ended up. And it's hard, I think, for a lot of consumers to understand how we got here, right?
You know, to most consumers, this is a sad story. But for someone who from off the farm, it creates pain in the heart. It just hits deep into you. We're in the business of producing, not killing, of creating life and meeting the needs of life and not killing. And this is painful. This reminds me of the 1980s as far as the depth of pain. It's obviously very different dynamics now than what we had in the mid-80s, but that was a very dark era. And the pain in individual farmers is very deep, and this reminds me of a lot of that.
Yeah, and one of the big differences, and I've been thinking about this, one of the big differences between now and the 80s with the raw emotions that are out there, Arlen, was in the 80s, it happened in slow motion for so many people, and you could see it coming, and it built, and it built, and it built. This has just been a jet plane ride into this feeling of tragedy. And people need to understand that if you're having trouble with dealing with this, you're not alone, and you need to reach out and talk to people, because this is hard to deal with, Arlen. And do what you have to do to deal with it, and that is reach out and talk to people. We got to do that, Arlen.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it's essential to talk about it. The spirit of the American farmer is one of independence and doing it alone and battling the adversity alone, and this is something that's too big for that. Need to reach out. It'll overwhelm you. It'll swallow you up, and need to reach out and talk about it. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, one of the things, and I know that Farm Journal News Director John Harith is out there somewhere, tapped into the system, and he
lurking listened, as always.
There he is. He was tapped in and listening to Colin Peterson's comments up at the JBS plant in Worthington, Minnesota. So, John, feel free, add to it, correct me, whatever. Secretary Perdue was talking this morning that and Representative Peterson reported that Perdue wants Worthington open, Sioux Falls open, and Waterloo open. That does make sense to me. How about you, Arlen?
Well, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, we still got to be able to get the employees back.
Yep.
And I know they're having discussions with the employee unions there as well, but the employees have to come back. You can open a plant up, but if you're missing several hundred employees, you still have lack of capacity there. And that's going to be one of the critical components, is making them feel safe enough to come back and having enough healthy employees to come back as well.
Yeah, John, he talked about that, didn't he?
Yeah, he said that they are putting in new measures for employee safety there. There was a representative of the union there at that meeting. But the bottom line is they had hoped to come back at 13,000 a day capacity. They're going to be at 3,000 a day capacity, so still a very large gap.
Yeah, a lot of gap to fill there, boy. One other thing that Peterson said, and Arlen, I'm sure you may have run these numbers, but he's thinking the estimate is that the number of hogs that may be euthanized, and I'm talking fat hogs that may be euthanized per day, 160,000 head. Have you heard that?
That's an updated number from what I've heard. So, you know, you think the long-term implications of that. We came into this with a surplus. First of all, because the industry expanded on the hopes that China would take this hogs in an export program. We finally got that export program geared up to what we thought it would be, but we built up the surplus ahead of that, and then our domestic demand fell apart. And so now all of a sudden we're seeing that supply be cut. And if we do get the demand back, and granted it's going to take a while to get the domestic demand back, but once we do, we're going to come out of this with much smaller numbers in the hog industry and cattle as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, the foreign demand for our product is not, when we do get back, it's not going to change, even though we've got smaller numbers. So the competition for the hogs is going to be increasing.
Yeah, it really is. China's going to buy that away from us.
Yeah, yeah, I cannot believe that we're at the end of that first segment already. We're talking with Arlen Suderman, INTLFC Stone. When we come back, he mentioned the fact that domestic pork demand just collapsed. Well, so did domestic ethanol demand. I want to talk about what's going on in the ethanol industry next with Arlen right here on AgriTalk. It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. USDA still has not sent the CFAP rule to OMB. That's going to delay it even further. Rains headed for dry areas of Europe in the Black Sea region, but relief expected to be limited. A row between Australia and China over the origins of the new coronavirus has escalated. That might sound familiar to you. China has threatened to boycott Australian education, tourism, and agricultural products. There is talk that China was shopping for cotton yesterday. The European Union farmers say storing milk prolongs the problem, just a hangover the market. McDonald's Canada to import beef, and ASF suspected in the death of several thousand pigs in India. Check out all the Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM. AgriTalk!
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. We're talking to Arlen Suderman. Oh, and John Harith is lurking out there as well. Before we get back to the conversation with Arlen, Davis, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat was 6¾ cents low. We're at 4.77 today. July soft red fell 9½ cents to 5.16½. May corn futures were 1¾ cents higher, 304½. December corn closed at 3.33½, up 3½ cents. May bean futures were 5¾ cents higher at 8.31¾. November 2020 bean futures closed at 8.44¼, up 5¼. June live cattle 42½ cents lower, 84.27½. May feeders a nickel higher, 118.55. And June lean hogs down 67½ cents to 55.52½. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you so much. Arlen Suderman is with INTLFC Stone. Arlen, I want to start this conversation on ethanol by taking a look at what has been going on in this corn market. May futures posted a low of $3.25 today, spiked last week's low of 301. Can we avoid a $2 handle, Arlen?
Well, that's kind of the expectation of trade, although we saw with the crude oil market last week that confidence needs to be somewhat careful at these low levels. We had a 277 average national average cash price yesterday for corn, and that was the lowest since August 31 of 2016 when we hit our harvest low at 273 and then quickly recovered. So hopefully we won't take that out and we can hold in here.
Yeah. Big part of the reason for the pressure on corn, of course, is the breakdown in the ethanol market. We're production last week was like 49% of the high of the year, which was 1.095. I think the second week of the year we topped out on the production side. But at least the stocks were drawn down. Arlen, do we finally have production below use?
Well, the most encouraging thing for me from this morning's energy report was that gasoline consumption went up for the second week in a row. And so that means that we're starting to bottom out the driving problem of people not driving, and we're starting to get back in the cars. It's going to be a slow recovery, that it looks like it's happening. And so, as was noted earlier, ethanol consumption was higher than what was production, so storage went down a little bit this last week. I think we're carving out the bottom right now for the industry. That gives me some encouragement. Overall, we kind of did an informal survey of industry people we work with in the energy sector and asked them, how much do you think gasoline consumption will be down versus the previous year, month by month, through the end of this year? And there's a wide range of estimates, so nobody really knows for sure. But the expectation was about 54% for the month of April, 41% for the month of May, 24% for the month of June, 13% for the month of July, et cetera. And so far, we're pretty close to that and starting to turn the corner back higher. And if we do that and we base ethanol demand off of that, assuming, as is happening, that export demand is going to be hurting for ethanol as well, that would suggest that we ought to be at about 4.780 billion bushels for ethanol use of corn for the current marketing year, which, of course, is still below USDA's 5.05. And then once we get that, then we can start looking up again.
Okay. Can we get gasoline consumption in, therefore ethanol? Can we get it back to pre-pandemic levels, or are we looking at permanent loss of demand?
Well, the range of expectations in our industry survey was some did have us back above year-ago levels by 10 or more percent by this fall, but others were considerably below. The average of the estimates was that we kind of plateau at 96% of average as we get into the fall and into next winter.
Okay. From someone that's supportive of ethanol and ethanol consumption and the farmers that provide the corn for it, I'd take 96%, Arlen.
Oh, we certainly would. We built our corn industry over the last 15 years on two strong pillars of demand. That's the biofuel program and the livestock industry, which is heavily integrated. And we thought that'd be solid demand for us, 88% of what we consume in those two sectors, really. And all of a sudden, coronavirus took the foundation out from underneath of it.
Yeah, so the recovery takes time. So as we deal with this destroyed demand for product right now, builds are carry out for the 2019-20 marketing year, and which increases our beginning stocks for the 2020-21 marketing year, Arlen. And when we there's some huge numbers out there from people that I've got a lot of respect for when we point at the bottom line for the end of the 2020-21 marketing year and carryover on corn. What are your thoughts there?
Well, first of all, on the production side, I expect USDA to use the 97 million acres from their March 31 survey and 178.5 bushel trend yield. And so that's going to give us a big crop. On the demand side, I don't think that they'll make all the adjustments on ethanol yet in the May report. So they're not quite going to be there. But I'm at over 3.5 billion for my carryout for next year if we don't get that big demand from China. Our people in China still think that it's going to come, and largely not because necessarily that they need it, but because it is so cheap. Our corn is right now about $1.15 or so cheaper than their corn. And so it makes some economic sense for them. The Chinese government can make money buying our corn and blending it with their lower quality reserve corn and selling it there.
Yeah. So it's more of a financial transaction rather than anything else. I think you're probably right there. That does make sense. Your people in China, Arlen, what are they saying about African swine fever and the status?
That it is close to as bad, if maybe not even a little bit worse than what it was before the coronavirus outbreak. Coronavirus took the priority of the resources. And they're seeing significant evidence of more outbreaks. Some commercial farms are being successful in avoiding it, but overall, it's a mess over there with African swine fever.
Yeah, that stinks. Is that going to impact our soybean exports?
It is. I do expect China to be an aggressive taker of U.S. soybeans in the new marketing year, probably starting in August and through the fall until the Brazilian new crop comes available, and then it'll fall off again. But overall, the Western Hemisphere is still producing too many soybeans versus world demand. So if China buys more from us just to follow phase one, that means non-China business goes south of the equator. So I don't think it gives us beans in the teens, but I do think the demand will feel good, particularly after we're coming off of these depressed lows in the commodity sector. And that may help the price outlook as we get in later in the year and we see that Chinese buying start to happen, which the buying, I think, will start here in the weeks ahead, but for delivery August and later.
Okay. All right. You did say that next month, when we get the first official look from USDA at the 2020-21 marketing year, the balance sheet for corn and soybeans, that USDA will use the 97 and the 83.5. Where do you think we end up on those numbers, Harlan?
At this point, I would say that Planted Acres are probably going to end up somewhere between 94 and 95. So about a 2.5% reduction perhaps in acreage, and that gets added on to soybeans, and then soybeans pick up at least 1 million acres probably from cotton as well.
Oof. So you're talking about maybe an 86.5 on bean acres?
Yes, exactly right.
Okay, so you were talking a little optimistic. That's not enough of an acreage increase to take away from your more optimistic view on beans, is it?
Yeah, I'm not bullish on beans by any means. But
right.
Sentiment, if you got demand, it does seem to help the market, the feel of the market, particularly if we've got a lot of money chasing it.
Yeah.
But then you start looking at weather and what can happen. How quickly do we slide into La Nina? Watching that equatorial Pacific and the sea surface temperatures off the Baja of California.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Obviously, we got to watch that really close. What do you make of these beef prices, Arlen? Just call it $350, heavyweight choice.
Yeah, record high right now. We've really got a pinch point in the system. It's just evidence that we've got a break in the chain right here. We have a whole industry built on just-in-time supplies from birth to the dinner table, and that has been broken.
Yeah, it is really fascinating. What's the recovery start to look like?
Well, hopefully get some plants open and then get some restaurants open. Many restaurants are starting to open at 25 to 50% capacity this weekend around the country. Hopefully we're doing it quick enough that people's fear isn't too great and they'll start coming back. I got a text just a little while ago from one of our brokers in Brazil talking about how the meat industry down there in Brazil is anxious to try to send some meat up here to the United States with our slaughter capacity problems.
Crazy, man, if that starts to happen. I mean, cattlemen's hair, collective hair is on fire already. If that starts to happen,
yeah,
they're going to burn the place down. Be tough to take. Arlen, it's always good to talk with you. Hopefully next time we get together, we'll be talking about better times.
Absolutely.
Good stuff. Thank you, Arlen. That's Arlen Suderman, INTLFC Stone. Davis and I will be back to wrap things up next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me. Hey.
Fall asleep there for a second, buddy?
No,
I am studying things.
This is National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook, May 5th through the 9th.
Whoa, big thunder.
Easy.
Boy,
these below normal temperatures are expected to push into the country, into the Corn Belt.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
Below normal temperatures for May 5th through the 9th. I don't know if that deserves an oh yeah.
Okay.
All right. But we've got the below normal temperatures for all Corn Belt. And I would call it, I would call it normal precipitation for most of the Corn Belt. You get down into some of the far southern areas of corn production, and we're looking for the opportunity for some above normal precipitation in Michigan. And the guys in Ohio are going to say, oh, yeah, right, to this. But there's below normal. Yeah.
Did you say, oh, yeah?
No, I didn't. In Ohio, there is an opportunity for some below normal precipitation May 5th through the 9th. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see if that works out or not. And Michigan is looking at below normal precipitation at that time as well, but below normal temperatures. Colin Peterson is...
Oh, man.
Yeah. You can tell that he's at the end of the rope trying to figure out what exactly can and should and must be done in this industry, in the hog industry in particular. But it does not exclude what is happening in the fat cattle market. You can put the cattle on hold a little bit longer. Okay, I get that. But I've tried that. Feeding cattle. And you get to the point where, and when I say feeding cattle, five, six head at a time, something like that. But if you put off making the phone call at just the right time and you find yourself, oh, geez, here instead of taking them in the middle of August, I got to wait until the end of September to get them into the locker. The feet start to go. The legs start to go. It just turns into a battle to keep those animals healthy to get them to the knife. So putting them on, putting the brakes on fed cattle can't happen. But as Arlen was talking about, as Congressman Peterson mentioned, putting the brakes on these hogs is just next impossible. And all of a sudden they're overwhelming the lines and the capabilities of the lines, and something needs to be done. I'll admit, when Peterson said the estimate is 160,000 head are going to have to be euthanized today, that just, I hadn't heard that number.
You guys talked about a great point there. This comes at a terrible time. Everybody was expanding. And I remember attending a land conference, like, I don't know if it was 2 years ago, maybe even 3 years ago at Iowa State. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, the hog industry, we're really picking up here. We're, seeing a lot of expansion, a lot of more barns going up. And then, demand from China, then ASF shows up. And, wow, we're going to need more hogs. And everybody was so excited about it.
Yeah. The thing is, the expansion in the hog industry, it is driven by different factors at different times, okay? Mm-hmm. But the latest round of expansion was driven by expectations of this demand for pork.
Yep.
You go back 10 years ago, and 10, 12 years ago, and there were hog barns going up all over the place, but it was for the manure.
Uh-huh.
Pork chops were a byproduct.
Right.
And the guys putting up the buildings knew it. That's what it was all about, was getting the manure out of those buildings. Now it's for the pork. And here we are. We suffer this just a tragic collapse in pork demand and our ability to handle the number of hogs that we ramped up for, frustrating.
Unfortunately, it isn't a case that necessarily we overproduced and got too excited, got ahead of ourselves.
They were listening to market signals.
Just that the circumstances, we got the legs cut out from under the market.
Yep, exactly. Now, if these hogs were sick and needed to be euthanized, these farmers would be getting a payment for it.
Right.
They'd find somehow some way to do it. But because it's a demand issue, as things stand right now, there is no compensation for those that are euthanizing hogs. Now, Colin Peterson up at Worthington said that the next coronavirus bill will include authorization and funding for USDA through the Commodity Credit Corporation to pay farmers for the depopulation of healthy animals in a crisis like we're in right now. Caused by the coronavirus.
Yeah, and Chip, that's actually a language in the CCC charter that only allows for depopulation in cases of animal disease outbreaks. And so they'd have to change that.
Yeah, this is scary stuff. When we start talking about paying producers to, and I don't know what that means. And when he throws a line out there like that, John, do all of a sudden the plans to euthanize 5,000 head at a farm, are those put on hold and we move those hogs somewhere somehow? And just,
well, he did say retroactively in his statement today. Now, that's not legislation that does that. That's just Colin Peterson saying it. But he did say retroactively in his statement today.
Okay, good, good. Boy, the attitude that he was showing up there, John, if he says that, I'm guessing he's going to round it up. He's going to make it happen.
He said, I guarantee this language will be in the next bill.
He said, I will find the money someplace to make this happen. Wow. And speaking of money, if you've ever wondered about the definition of what it looks like to push on a string and try to make momentum, listen to Jay Powell asking Congress to spend more. Asking Congress to spend more. They've printed everything that they can. They just can't get it out to stimulate the economy is what that means. They're pushing on a string trying to stimulate the economy. For Davis, John, and producer Joe Stackler, thanks for listening. Tomorrow morning, Dr. Andy Randolph from NASCAR. Tomorrow afternoon, Brian Basting, right here on AgriTalk.